Good afternoon. I'm Louis Sainte, your host for the weekend. And joining us today is former UTEP political science professor, Dr. Tony Payan. He was here at UTEP for 14 years. He's now at Rice University. He's with Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Tony is the director of the Center for the United States and Mexico. Tony, thank you so much for being with us.
My pleasure, Louis. It's good to be here with you again.
So I briefly gave a little outline of your background. If you wouldn't mind bringing us up to date with all that, because a lot of people don't realize that while you were here during those 14 years, you got a lot accomplished here at UTEP as well.
It was a number of really very good years. The most active years were, of course, between 2001 and 2012. In 2013, I went over to Rice University as a visiting professor, and then, of course, I founded the Mexico Center over at Rice University, and I ended up staying as a director. But I taught many different kinds of classes in the political science department, and I still stay in touch with many of my former students at the political science department, many of them now lawyers and of course, senior professionals and so on. So my years at UTEP are remembered with great, great fondness.
And, of course, we can't forget the many times that you were with us as an expert on our different talk shows, including during Desert Storm, the Gulf War. You were here with us all those times. Now, tell us a little bit about your job as a director for the United States and Mexico Center. What does that entail?
Yeah, it is within the Baker Institute for Public Policy. The Baker Institute for Public Policy was founded in 1993, so I'm 27. It's going to be 28 years this year. Founded by former Secretary of State and Treasury, Mr. Baker, James A. Baker III. And at that time was conceived as a think tank, much like the Brookings Institution in Washington, D.C., much like the Woodrow Wilson Center also in Washington, much like the Hoover Institute in at Stanford. And Baker, of course, at Rice is now ranked number one among university-based think tanks. So it's been a very successful think tank. When I got there in 2012, at the end of 2012 and 2013, I was essentially invited to look at immigration as an issue. There was, if you remember, there was a lot of interest in 2013 and 2014 because the Gang of Eight, four Republicans and four Democrats, had proposed a new bill, an immigration reform bill, which eventually died because then Speaker of the House Boehner did not want to bring it to the floor. The Republicans controlled the House at that point, and they just didn't want to consider the bill. And so at that point, I was taking a very hard look at the possibilities of immigration reform. But over the course of those months in early 2013, I wondered why in Texas we did not have a center for the study of the United States and Mexico and the binational relationship when it's really one of the most central relationships for the United States, certainly ranking among the top three, five relationships. I think no other country really has the kind of impact on the lives of millions of Americans as Mexico does in a very direct way, sometimes through good and sometimes through bad. I mean, obviously demographics, language, history, but also trade, economic integration, lots of good activity that goes on, much of it here on the border. And, of course, some of it bad, obviously drug trafficking, undocumented migration. And so it's a very intense relationship. And I knew of the U.S. Center for U.S. and Mexican Studies in California, and I, of course, knew of the Mexico Institute at the Woodrow Wilson Center in Washington, but Texas is really the center of it all, and I wonder why Texas didn't have a center, much like those in California and Washington, and so I brought that proposal to Mr. Baker and the board of advisors of Baker Institute. They loved the idea, and they asked me to piece it together, figure out how to operationalize it, and then I ended up being asked to stay as a director. And I'll tell you, Louis, it was a very interesting interview because Mr. Baker, in his very executive way of doing things, he's a very concise man with a great synthetic intelligence. After I made the presentation for the center, he called me to his office and he asked me three questions. He said, Tony, I have three questions for you. One, do we need a Mexico center? And I said, yes. And I added a couple of sentences on why. And then he said, can we do it well? And I said, I think we can do it very well. And then he said, we'll just stay and do it. It was like the shortest job interview ever. Three questions. That was the end of it. And here we are. The rest is history.
Well, congratulations. And you make us all proud. So thank you very much for everything that you've done and continue to do. We are visiting with Professor Dr. Tony Payan. Dr. Payan, as he just told us, is the director for the Center for the United States and Mexico at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. So what we wanted to discuss today, a variety of issues, but the one that comes to the forefront right away is, of course, you mentioned immigration, and right now we have the situation with migration at the border, and I wanted to get your take on that and what's going on right now in the U.S.-Mexico border.
I think the very first argument that I want to put on the table for your listeners is the idea that despite the rhetoric that is coming out of the governor's office in Austin and, of course, Mr. Wolf, who was the Secretary of Homeland Security under the Trump administration, despite all those statements that are floating around in the air, I think the one thing that we have to understand about immigration is that it has really dogged a lot of different presidents for a very long time. Obviously, it was a problem for the Clinton administration. It was a problem for the George W. Bush administration. It was a problem for the Obama administration. And I'll say something about that in a minute. It was a problem for the Trump administration. We have to remember that under the Trump administration, despite all the rhetoric that we heard, those 4 years also saw surges. 2019 was a particularly dramatic year in terms of immigrant surges on the border. And, of course, now the Biden administration is learning, through these very difficult times, that this is a problem that doesn't seem to go away. So it's been on and on. It doesn't really matter what the U.S. policy is or the rhetoric is. I mean, some presidents have deported many, many immigrants, President Obama did. Others have been more amenable to immigration, at least rhetorically, like Mr. Bush and Mr. Biden, and yet others, like Mr. Trump, was particularly vociferous about his policies on immigration, and yet they all saw the same thing. So it goes up and down. What I think we have to ask ourselves is, what is the problem with immigration? Because it doesn't seem to be related to any particular policies by the U.S. administrations. And I think it obviously has to do with two major issues. One is the conditions on the ground that do push people out of those countries in Central America, and also in Mexico, by the way, Mexican migration, which had seen lows in the last few years, is now surging up a little bit again, because under Mr. Lopez Obrador, the conditions in Mexico have deteriorated quite a bit economically, and so more Mexicans are now trying to breach the border. So it is about the push factors. And then, of course, there is the other component, which is the pull factors. That is the messaging that goes out of the United States about how open the administration is to immigration. And a combination of these two, broken down into various aspects, I think is what really explains why people choose to go, to move, and to try to reach the border and to turn themselves in. However, one more thing on that. In 2014, I think we saw a real transformation of the immigration flows. It stopped being mostly single men, single adults trying to breach the border between ports of entry and trying to escape the notice of the Border Patrol. And what we saw was essentially a transformation from single individuals into families and minors. And we may remember that summer of 2014 was the first time we saw a huge surge of unaccompanied minors coming to the border. Two, it was a caravanization of migration. All of a sudden, not an individual or a small group of individuals, but sometimes thousands of people marching on through Mexico onto the border. And The third thing that I think is important to note is that many of them don't cross the border between ports of entry. Some try, but most really just turn themselves in asking for asylum. So the very phenomenon of immigration is changing, and it certainly has become very different since 2014. And it was the same thing under President Obama, same thing under President Trump, and now Biden is also learning that.
What about, you mentioned a little while ago about single men and women crossing the border, unaccompanied minors. Some of the situations that have arisen now, some of the people who are against this migration or criticizing it, they will say a lot of these minors do not even belong to these men and women who are trying to cross. They're being perhaps abducted or mistreated by these men and women so that the children will come along.
Yeah, there is that idea, of course, and it is quite possible that some of those cases, some of those certain percentage of those minors are really people who are abducted or who are perhaps even human trafficked. I mean, there is that problem there, and I think the governor Abbott is trying to focus on that. I think that is a minor problem. I'm sure for a small percentage of them, that is the case. However, I think that most of them are really just minors who are going to meet some family member in the United States. Somebody is already in the United States, and the mother or the father who is left behind in El Salvador, in Guatemala, in Honduras, or in some place in Mexico, are simply saying, look, I can't support a kid anymore. The conditions here are not good. I'm just going to hire somebody, perhaps even a member of an organized gang who does this for money, and I'm going to send him to the border. And then, of course, they know that when that minor comes into the hands of the U.S. immigration authorities, they're going to have to try to figure out what to do with them. And according to the Flores Agreement back into the 1990s, those kids have to be retained would be the word, because they're not technically detained. They're retained by U.S. authorities for 3 days and then channeled over to a relative already in the United States who will receive them and then eventually present them in court. So there is that knowledge. That knowledge circulates, I think, very quickly to those families, and they make those decisions. Yeah, there is that component. They're probably paying somebody to escort that kid along the way onto the border, and then they probably tell the kid, hey, you see that man in green or in blue, which is the uniform of the U.S. authorities, you go turn yourself into them, and they'll take care of you, and then they let them go. So there's certainly that component, and I think there is a great danger that what we are doing is strengthening the hand of organized crime, because there's profit to be made, incentives for new entrants into smugglers. How much of it is trafficking as opposed to smuggling? That is a key question. I know Governor Abbott is focusing on the trafficking component, which is probably a small part of it, and what we ought to really be doing is focusing on the smuggling, which is an important component. It could be organized, but it's not about trafficking in humans. It's simply about organized leading of these kids onto the border and then letting them loose right over the bridge, like we've seen in El Paso.
We're visiting with Dr. Tony Payan. Dr. Payan is the director of the Center for the United States and Mexico, based out of Rice University, Baker Institute for Public Policy. Dr. Payan, the Associated Press, I think it was yesterday, they had a story that came out that said that there were some top U.S. advisors who will be meeting with top Mexican officials, and one of those is Roberto Velasco. He is the Mexican director for North American Affairs. And according to Mr. Velasco, they were going to try and have joint efforts for secure, safe, and regulated migration.
Yes. There's a couple of things. I think sometimes politicians and functionaries make mistakes. One of the biggest mistakes the foreign ministry in Mexico made was to dismantle the Undersecretariat for North American Affairs and designate this young man as the one in charge of this very complex relationship. It is very hard to understand why the foreign ministry would dismantle what is essentially the most important regional bureau at the foreign ministry. But it is what it is. Mr. Velasco is a very young man, probably doesn't quite understand the complexity of the North American relationship, or where Mexico is situated, is now in charge of this very complex problem. But at this point, I think, much like under Trump, under Biden, it's going to become a transactional issue. That is, what do you need? What do I need? What can you offer? And what can I give? And I think the Biden administration obviously has sectioned off the migrants into three different categories: single individuals, family units, and unaccompanied minors. I think the fundamental change in the policy under the Biden administration is that they're no longer deporting the unaccompanied minors. They are deporting single adults under Title 42, which is this emergency power that is granted to the president by the pandemic, COVID-19. And, of course, some family units are also being expelled. But at the same time, some immigrants who were stranded in Ciudad Juarez and Tijuana in different Mexican cities are being let in because they were already on the waiting list to be allowed into the United States and to request asylum. And then unaccompanied minors are no longer summarily being sent back to Mexico. They're being taken in and processed and overwhelming the system that was put in place before the Biden administration and dismantled under the Trump administration, I think. So it's kind of a complex issue. There is a rumor that whereas Trump used the stick, so to speak, and told Mr. Lopez Obrador, you either stop the migrants or detain them in Mexico, or I will impose on tariffs on trade between the two countries, Biden is using carrots instead, saying, hey, we'll give you some COVID vaccines if you help us with the migration flows. Either way, whether it's a stick or a carrot, I think Mexico will probably end up cooperating with the United States. It's also in Mexico's interest to stem the flow of these migrants, because many of them will eventually end up in Mexico under very difficult conditions. We saw it in Ciudad Juarez, for example, when I visited in the last few months, the encampments of these migrants in the Chamizal Park and things like that, and the migrant house and a refuge in Ciudad Juarez as well, which I visited, and they're very complicated conditions, and so probably Mexico wants to avoid that, and there'll be some kind of agreement between the two governments.
Dr. Payan, a lot of times we don't get the information. Perhaps some of the Mexican newspapers, Mexican television stations do talk about it, but you rarely find that in U.S. Publications, the fact that what is Mexico doing at their southern border to prevent or not prevent these people from migrating up north?
Look, Mexico has also been under pressure by the United States and made some important mistakes. I had visited the border between Chiapas and Guatemala a few times over the years, and it's a fairly open border. I mean, most people, even though there is an international bridge over the Suchiate River, the bridge is practically empty, and there is a lot of different rafts that carry you across the river. I mean, it's a river that actually has water, as opposed to our river on the Paso del Norte region, where sometimes there's practically no water. That river does have water, and so there's rafts bringing all kinds of things back and forth between Guatemala and Mexico. Some of it contraband, some of it just merchandise, and some of it migrants. So I've kind of observed what has been going on there. And obviously, under the Trump administration, through that strategy that he used, like I mentioned, the sticks rather than the carrots, the Mexican government deployed the National Guard and the military onto the southern border and essentially pushed the immigrants back. I mean, they shut down the border, they pushed them back into Guatemala, and they made a real effort. And then, of course, there are some checkpoints along the different highways in Mexico coming out of Chiapas going north. So Mexico did make an effort, and we did see a reduction in the flows of immigrants. And Guatemala also had a third country agreement, kept some of them in there. And then, of course, the U.S. was working with Salvador and Honduras as well to detain some of those migrants. So those borders were being shut down. I think President López Obrador in Mexico let up a little bit over the transition period, and so more migrants kind of made it along the way. The checkpoints are still there, by the way, but migrants will find a way. So instead of crossing over in Tecunumán, Guatemala, onto Hidalgo City in Chiapas, they're now crossing in the jungle on the other side of the Guatemalan-Chiapas border. And so migrants will find a way to make it across the border in the south. I think López Obrador is now redeploying some elements, some specific members of the National Guard and military to help Biden with the crisis in exchange for these vaccines. That's the story developing today. But it'll be difficult because I don't think that Biden and López Obrador had a good relationship. In fact, just yesterday I wrote a piece talking about the coming conflict on trade, for example, and things like that. So I'm afraid that the situation's going to become very complicated. And obviously Biden now needs Mexico to stop this crisis that is drawing attention now. And Mr. López Obrador has some leverage, not for long, but I think he has some leverage over the U.S. We'll see what happens.
We're visiting with Dr. Tony Payan. Dr. Payan is the director of the Center for the United States and Mexico at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. You mentioned President López Obrador and also COVID-19, and some people are wondering also about what is Mexico doing or how are they handling the COVID situation, because there's a lot of concern because people in Mexico have relatives here and people here have relatives in Mexico. And it's not about pointing fingers and saying, you didn't get checked, but it's about everybody keeping healthy.
Yes, obviously on the El Paso Juarez region, as in many other regions across the border, some of the traffic got stopped. Mexican citizens are not able to cross into the United States, those carrying those crossing cards, the B-1, B-2 visas, for the regular people that come from Juarez into El Paso and so on. But unfortunately, I think the border was not shut down for American citizens. And as you know, many El Pasoans, I guess, U.S. citizens and U.S. permanent residents do go to Juarez, do go to see the doctor in Juarez or the dentist, and they go visit family and they go socialize in Juarez, and they have the right to return into El Paso. So we did see the traffic across the two cities, for example, and I'm speaking specifically about El Paso and Juarez because I saw the numbers reduced to less than 50%, and then, of course, they're back up to about 60% because people adjust and they make some adjustments. So U.S. citizens and residents are, of course, still able to use the border, cross back and forth. I've done it myself several times into Juarez and back into El Paso. But I think the big issue here is that, well, that doesn't help the pandemic on either side. And I mentioned that we saw the numbers in El Paso just a few months ago get dramatically high, despite the fact that Mexican citizens were not able to come in. And so the spread continued, and it was just simply carried by people who were actually used the border, even if some, 40 to 50% of them, were not able to use the border. So it was, to me, it was an absurd measure to simply close it to some but not to others and so on. But I think Mexico overall has handled the pandemic very poorly. The estimated number of deaths today at the end of March is about 200,000, but the excess deaths are probably closer to 350,000. And that's probably more like it. I think that I've heard some reports in some cities in Mexico that people avoid listing COVID-19 as the complicating cause of death because they don't want the stigma, I guess, the stigmatization. And so, and some civil registries don't write COVID on the death certificate and so on. So clearly Mexico is in much worse shape than it appears. And there may be as many as 350 or more thousand deaths in Mexico. And, of course, the vaccines were not negotiated in time. So less than 1% of all Mexicans have been vaccinated. Mexico is in dire need of vaccines with no real contracts for more vaccines to come into the country. no real measures were implemented. The semaphore that was implemented, the green, yellow, and orange, and red, never really worked. The confinement never really was fully implemented. And, of course, the number one mistake was that President López Obrador, much like Trump, by the way, initially completely discounted the danger of the virus, the coronavirus, and the eventual pandemic. And to this day, the president refuses to talk about it and lies to the press and the public, essentially saying, oh, things are fine, we're almost done, we're almost through this, it's no big deal. He continues to do that, and I think that sends the wrong message, and many people do not, really just don't take care of themselves or their families because they are attuned to what the leadership is saying, and if the leadership is saying things are okay, then they don't see any reason to, adopt specific measures to protect themselves and their families. And so it's, I think Mexico is not done. Even if the United States vaccinates everyone and we get through it and we can see the light at the end of the tunnel, perhaps by the summer, Mexico's got the rest of the year to go. It's been a difficult situation, and I think it will continue for quite a bit longer.
So having said what you just did about the Mexican president, how does that play out with his relationship with President Biden?
Well, we're seeing now, if I made a reference to it, how it's being played out. Mr. Biden and Mr. López Obrador met in February virtually, and one of the things that Mr. López Obrador did ask was, can you send us some vaccines? Can we get American vaccines into Mexico? But I think the Biden administration was very, very clear. My priorities is U.S. citizens and residents. When I am done vaccinating all 330 million people in the United States, then I can take care of the rest. And, of course, Mexico and Canada will come next. But Americans are first. And I think that is being executed in the United States. We see it now. We're probably approaching 120 million people vaccinated in the United States. It's really a story of great success in government action under the Biden administration. Not so in Mexico. And so Mexico is at the mercy of the United States and, of course, trying to leverage immigration cooperation to get 2-3 million vaccines from the United States. I think there's a lack of leadership. I mean, leaders ought to be truthful and should be clear, and the messaging has to be clear, and the rhetoric has to be right. And I think that's what we got with the Biden administration eventually in the United States, and now we're clearer about what we need to do and what is being done, but not so in Mexico. I think the situation in Mexico is still very foggy, very unclear, and the leadership is still kind of lost in the desert. So we'll see what happens.
Well, Dr. Payan, thank you so much for being with us. We've been visiting with Dr. Tony Payan. Dr. Payan is the director of the Center for the United States and Mexico at Rice University's Baker Institute for Public Policy. Tony, thank you for being with us.
It's a pleasure to be with you again, Louis, and hello to all your listeners. Happy to join you this time.
Thank you. The Weekend is taped and produced at the KTP Studios, University of Texas at El Paso Communication Building. Our thanks to our engineer and producer, Sam Cassiano. You've been tuned to The Weekend. I'm Louis Sines.